Here's Higdon. It sits up nicely for Michael Higdon. And what a start for Motherwell. But here's Malt, and he goes for it for Sam. Magnificent Malt. Stephen Robinson celebrates. Motherwell, 2-1. And could that be the goal that puts him into the Betfred Cup final?
He's got Irwin. The supporting links from Ainsworth on the angle. Lionel Ainsworth fires home.
It's Lasley deep into stoppage time. Up goes Sutton. No foul given. Kerr. And Reid is there to knock it in. The goal is given. Hesitation for Craig Reid, who scores his first ever goal in senior football. And what a moment for Motherwell.
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Today I'm joined by Motherwell first team coach Maurice Ross to look back in the 2019-20 season. We'll talk about our ambitions going forward, how Maurice is dealing with life without football just now, and we'll see what else takes a fancy over the next half an hour or so. Maurice, one of my favourite guests that I've ever had on the podcast, thank you very much for joining me again.
Thanks, that's nice of you to say, thank you.
Well, I've started every podcast of the last 14 by asking this question. How are you coping with life without football? Normality for us has changed so drastically in the last couple of weeks.
You know, it's one of the ones where I think the first couple of weeks where you're trying to find your routine, you try to find your rhythm, you try to see what works for you, what doesn't. And ultimately, it's kind of boiled down to gardening, keeping a wee bit of fitness going, box sets, you know. Watching movies, etc. You know, I think if you ask anybody in the squad or involved in football, their cars will be gleaming, their garden fences will be painted, their patios have been jet washed, and I'm no different. So it's to sit and complain about being bored is when there's people losing their lives and whatnot, it seems somewhat, a bad thing to kind of talk about. But you know, it is the case that we are kind of, we're missing football, we're missing the competition, we're missing testing each other on a daily basis. So, but you know, the sooner the better the virus is kept under control and we can all get back to normality, then I think that'll be a welcome break for everybody.
Looking back on last season, it was obviously very successful on the park to the point where the season was interrupted. The Aberdeen game was a massive game, perhaps the biggest game of the season. The Friday night game, that fell. Well, it was one of the first games in Scotland to be cancelled, and then after that, everything followed. But you must be very satisfied with how the team have performed on the park. It's often the phrase that's used is punching above their weight, but I think it's very, very apt this season, third place, and they're in merit.
You know, for Motherwell to ever be finishing in the top six, where we are, you know, in this current climate, in terms of the financial constraints that we have, is nothing short of miraculous. I do believe it's down to having a good understanding of what individuals we want to bring in the building. It's about creating synergies between players. So you know, if you've got a slow centre back, for instance, then you're covering that with a quicker fullback, or You know, there's so many different permutations that we look to when we're recruiting. But I think the main thing for our positioning is we have a brilliant bunch of boys, which comes from recruitment, ultimately. Then it's about making good players very good players. And I think we've been very, very good at that. To say it's miraculous to be in the third position is, even from a point of view that when you look at it, we've actually lost many players last season. We've also had injuries with David Turnbull. We've lost James Scott. You know, we've lost Jake Hastiefield last year. So the fact that we've able to, I don't know the exact numbers, I don't know how many players we lost last year, I don't know, nine or something, to then bring in players from lower leagues football in England to be able to compete and go toe-to-toe. And you know, of course, we've been beaten by Rangers and Celtic this year, but the way we performed against them it was, you know, we've had many plaudits from guys like Gordon Strachan, etc., saying that, you know, the Motherwell are a very well organised, well drilled, exciting football team to watch. And yeah, we're going to lose matches. Of course, we're going to, you know, but this is part of being, for want of a better word, part of a provincial football club. And this is what makes Motherwell such a nice football club. You know, there's an appreciation from people. I think, you know, when like Rangers and Celtic, they used to win in all the time. There becomes a that expectancy, so it's not really like it should be. But with us sitting in third and the football we've been playing, it's a nice wee place, you know, Motherwell. The people seem to be appreciating it. And it's just nice to be part of. But I do believe that it's all down to good recruitment and good coaching. Recruitment, again, like to reiterate, is bringing in good characters, good people who want to be coached. It's all right bringing in a good player. They think they know it all and they don't want to be coached. Then you're not going to play for Motherwell. So it's as much the player's humility that makes our jobs easier.
And that's an interesting thing on the recruitment that's often been mentioned by the manager, that perhaps he picks up some rough diamonds, guys that have maybe lost their way somewhat in the game. And he seems to have the self-confidence and the self-belief to know that he can get better out of these players, can maybe turn these players' fortunes around. Using an example, someone like Chris Long, I heard a really interesting thing with Stephen Naismith talking about Chris Long and how he felt that he'd maybe stagnated a wee bit, and he was surprised a player of his talent hadn't kicked on the way it was anticipated when he was at Everton. He's come and had a great season at Motherwell, and Stephen Robinson really seems to have got the best out of Chris.
Yeah. Listen, this is what the manager's forte is, taking any footballer and re-educating or, you know, realigning people. I mean, for me, the best one this year has been the transformation of Declan Gallagher. No, there's a boy that was playing for Livingston, decent Livingston player, and he's came in and been a revelation for us this year. Ended up getting a Scotland cap. So. Like I said, listen, we're no miracle workers. You know, you can't take a dud and make him into a world beater. But the manager seems to, along with Martin Foyle, they seem to be able to pick up people with certain traits that are that malleable, that they can then be kind of moulded into a better version of themselves from when we picked them up. Because if they were the better version of themselves, we couldn't afford them. So we need to get the raggy dolls. We need to get the ones that have got the, you know, maybe a checkered history, or they've maybe fallen into a favourite in academy or whatever. But it's about getting energy givers, boys that radiate good energy, and coaching them, and keep coaching them, and no stop coaching them every single day. And I'm sure there's days the boys want to turn up and have a game of five-a-sides, and you know the manager's quite good to give them that. But fundamentally, you're coming in the building. Ultimately, sorry, you're coming in the building to be coached and to leave the building after your two-year contract, a one-year contract, which we typically offer, a better footballer. And if we are making better footballers, we have more chance of winning football matches, which bodes well for Motherwell Football Club, as it's shown this season.
And that's something that resonates right across the football club as well. There's always seems to be demands for people to be the very best they can be and apply themselves to any aspect of their work, whether that be the hospitality side, the media side, the kit man. It's everyone is pushing in the right direction and seems to work so hard for the passion for the football club first and foremost, and also for the betterment of themselves as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a small knit community within the building. It's everybody knows everyone. We all gel, we all eat together, from the commercial department to the CEO and Alan Burrows. You know, you're looking at the chefs. I mean, if you look at how many we've got best in class at the football club in different departments, as many. You know, we talk about best in class on this pro license and on, and you sometimes see some establishments and they don't have best in class. Whereas when I look at our groundsman, for instance, you're not going to tell me there's a better groundsman in Scottish football. There's no. So, and we've got cracking coaches. We've got a chef who... He's a Motherwell fan. He, honest to God, this guy lives, eats and breathes Motherwell Football Club. You know, And he's not just cooking the dinners like, you know, you would expect. He's gone out his way to prepare little chalkboards to show the young lads. So he writes what is protein. So the young lads will know some of the products that we are putting into them. So he's actually telling them and going out his own way to show them that this is protein, this is carb, this is this, and he labels everything for them. Now, he does that off his own back, but that's just him wanting to be the best he can to do his little bit for Motherwell Football Club to win a match on Saturday. And it's like that in the whole building. The media team are phenomenal. I mean, again, I've not seen a media team like it. So, you know, I think much credit goes to the board, to Alan Burrows for employing the right people. And I think that started with hiring a manager. And he has put his stamp on the football club, and it's about creating an environment that everybody wants to be as good as he can be. Now, you might never get there, but if you've got that attitude that you want to be good at your job, then you've got half a chance. And people can forgive people that don't quite make it, but if they give their all. And that seems to be the culture when you walk in the place. It's so crystal clear.
And you were exceptionally complimentary of Stephen Robinson on the last podcast that you did. I think it would be fair to say, though, that Stephen's stock value just now is even higher than it was this time last season. And you think the season before that, two cup finals, he's continuing to strive for success and achieving that success as well, which is doubly impressive.
Yeah, I mean, success is sometimes too black and white. I always feel that football clubs should come out with a blueprint of what is success to that football club. So, if you know, I mean, it's all relevant. So you've got Rangers. Rangers being second is not good enough for Rangers Football Club. Their blueprint is to finish first. Now, Motherwell's blueprint, even though they don't come out and say it maybe, it would be to be third, anything above third bottom based on finances is what we, you know, privately we want to be top six all the time. But when you're competing against teams that are paying $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a week for forwards, when you look at it realistically, we shouldn't be competing with them. However, because we've got the right blend of youth, you know, experience, good boys, good attitudes, good athletes, good coaching, it all seems to come together, and it's I'm just really, really glad and that I'm part of it. And listen, as soon as I seen the gaffer in action with Craig Holmescliffe and Lars when I first came in the building, these three are at the top of their game, and it's no surprise to me that, you know, the manager's now getting recognised and people are starting to talk about him, etc. But at the end of the day, our focus is on what's right for Motherwell, and the manager's planning for next season already, and also got one eye on the season being turned. So there's no stone unturned when it comes to the staffing and how we prepare for things at Motherwell.
I suppose that's something that's inevitable. You see this week with the departure of Michael O'Neill as the Northern Ireland manager, Stephen straight away is mentioned in the reckoning for that. Luton Town, another club that are looking for a manager. The bookmakers fancy his chances of getting that. It's going to be the case that every high-profile manager's job that comes up just now, Stephen Robinson's very likely to be linked with it, which is testimony to his success. But he doesn't seem to be someone that gets his head turned or anything like that. The heart speculation earlier on in the season continued moving Motherwell in the right direction. Thankfully, from a Motherwell point of view, that move didn't happen. But it's inevitable that that continued speculation is going to be there as long as Stephen Robinson's enjoying the success that he has.
I mean, it's like anything. Any line of work you're in, if you're good at your job, you know, there's always the chance or the possibility that you'll be headhunted. And it's like, you know, David Turnbull, phenomenal footballer. Of course he's going to be linked to be bigger football clubs than what we are. But this is just par for the course. If you look at Motherwell over history, it's been a selling club. And if you perform well, the big vultures come in and they throw money at it or they entice people away. But in terms of the manager's the character, he's certainly, you know, the gaffer's a working class man, a working class background, no airs or graces. Doesn't really get involved in any kind of gossip, you know, on social media, etc. So, like I said, all I know is he's preparing for next season to be to provide Motherwell with a platform that we can go and perform again next year. Or you never know what's happening. It might be in 5-6 weeks' time that we're returning to play in empty stadiums. We don't know, but we'll be prepared on that anyway.
And you moved into the role of first team coach after heading up the 18s to 21s. Again, last time you were on, we talked about some of the young players coming through. We discussed the likes of Alan Campbell, Jake Hasty, David Turnbull, that were all performing so well in the first team. This season, there's not been as many opportunities for some of the younger guys. That normally comes a wee bit later on in the season, it must be said. But you had the James Scott, who was maybe touted for loan moves, and the fans weren't 100% sure if he was ready to make the step up. You certainly suggested that he was at the time, and he very much proved that during the first half of the season. Won himself a big money move to Hull City. Part of the club's model is to bring on these players, develop them, and sell them on. And James, it was a fantastic bit of business for the club. But it's a one you treat with a bit of a heavy heart as well, because it's so disappointing to see someone that was really flourishing move on.
So we as a staff, you know, we don't want to lose our best players. But at the end of the day, you know, the club needs to run on. It's not running on fresh air. You know,
no, of course not.
James Scott's move probably secures Motherwell for another season without income from any other point, like fans or anything. So it's certainly good business from that point of view. Yes, we want to keep James Scott, but realistically, you know, we're paying some boys 300 quid that are in the first team. What are you going to do when somebody offers you £8,000 a week? You're going to go, aren't you? Now, I'm not saying they were the figures for James, but I'm just saying in general, this is the kind of thing that happens. So it's finding that balance of knowing when to let people go and when you need to hold on to them. And, you know, looking at the squad we have now, there's many sellable assets in there. And again, the manager seems to have a knack of just knowing, no, now he needs to go. Or, no, we need to keep him for 6 months. And the model seems to work, because we seem to find boys the next year and the year after. So it seems to, it's no conveyor belt of talent. It doesn't work like that. But if we can promote the odd youngster, plus bring in a guy from down south that we make money on, what's the difference? We're still being frugal in our approach. Yet we've got a good economic balance between performing on the pitch and not acting in a reckless manner by overdoing it in the transfer market. It will never happen. There's too many smart, clever people that are in charge of the football club and care about the football club. It's not going to be a reckless thing. We're always going to live between our means and make football better. And by making footballers better, you run the risk of losing. And that's just how we need to operate. So it's a great club to be involved in, I must admit. Every day I love going to my work, and it's not just me. Everybody feels the same. There's a real tight-knit community within the building. And honestly, I keep coming back to it. The players, they make their jobs easy because they're so coachable, they're so likeable. We're so hungry to be part of Motherwell's success. And it really is. The club's in a good place at the moment.
And a couple of days after you were on the last time, David Devine and Dean Cornelius both appeared for the first team against Livingston. Seen Jamie Semple again during the Betfred games, and some cameo appearances from the bench as well in the Premiership. It does feel like there's young players ready to make that step again, which is very encouraging as fans to see that while the door closes and the time for James Scott, for instance, you've got these other guys coming through and that next draft of exciting talent. As you say, it's not always going to be the case that you're going to get two or three in the one season, but it does seem like the youth set up and the academy set up is continuing to prove very fruitful for Motherwell.
Yeah, and what we typically do is, you've got the three or four at the moment, maybe even five, that are training with the first team regular, like your Dean Cornelius, Yusuf, David Devine, Ross McKeever, Jamie Semple was injured recently. These boys train with the first team every day. Now, what happens there is their awareness needs to become a wee bit sharper. They need to do things that 1 second quicker. But what happens is, because the standard's better than what you're used to, their confidence can still sometimes take a battering because they're playing against much better players that maybe show them up sometimes. But in the long run, they will come through. I think there's no reason that Dean Cornelius can't replace Alan Campbell. If Alan Campbell went to England, in a year's time, Dean Cornelius, who, by the way, is on a strict regime, at all the five talents that we were talking about there, five, six talents, they're on strict regimes to hit target weight, which is putting on muscle mass. So when you walk in the dressing room, they're starting to look more like first-team players, whereas last year they looked like wee boys. So, you know, it's not just a case of, okay, Alan Campbell goes right, bang somebody else in off the conveyor belt. It doesn't work like that. But what we're doing is we're giving the boys the best opportunity by letting them train with the first team. Even if that means the manager's got number too many for the session to be perfect numbers, he'll still bring them in because he knows in the long term, on the long run, it's going to be better for the individual, which means it's better for the football. So no, listen, these young boys are on the right road. I believe all the ones I've mentioned there can be multiple first team players, depending on their application and how well they can take on information, real time, and the heat of them in the battle. Do they understand the positions? And to be fair, I think they do. I really think they do. I think it's about a maturity thing now. It's about knowing themselves in the group. I keep telling the young lads, stop acting like young boys. Act like first team players. Walk in the dress like you own it. There's a bit of that where you have the arrogance to show, hey, I'm ready for this. But still be humble enough to recognise I'm still a young boy and I've still got the balls, I've still got the goals. So it's that balance that I'm often talking to the young boys about. I think he owns the pitch. John Galka thinks he owns the training pitch. And it shows, you know, when the games, because he's got that mentality. No, Tate doesn't think he owns it, but he knows he's a good footballer and it shoots. And I think these young boys need to get that. As much as we want nice wee boys for the 90 minutes, I want wee animals that are just robots that are just going to want to do anything to first of all, show the manager in training. If they get a chance in the pitch, then you've got to take it.
In the mention of maturity, David Turnbull obviously experienced a real kind of life-changing scenario last summer where from feeling like he was at the peak of his powers, there was a big money move on the table. And things turned around 360 so quickly. He's shown remarkable maturity in the way that he's brought himself back. The football club seems to have been absolutely superb in supporting him. The documentary they produced was really, really interesting, but it was a good insight as well to how David handles himself and the difficulties that he endured during that. It must have been a very frightening time for him. As I say, it was at the point where it felt like he had the world at his feet, and then for that to be so cruelly kind of torn away from him must have been very, very difficult to understand. But he's worked his way back up. He was beginning to make appearances for the first team again. It's first and foremost a delight to see him back, but how impressed have you been by his mindset and his dedication to getting himself back to the level required to be a first team player again?
Listen, David Turnbull's a star. There's no other way. He's a star. His first training session, he came back in, he lit the thing up. Him and Polworth, it was like watching the Harlem Globetrotters. It was like when a man playing in a playground with five-year-olds. You know, that's no disrespect to the other players who are playing, but the level that he shows is magnificent. Listen, he's going to... He will make his money. He will do whatever he wants in football. What I've been impressed with in this what you've talked on there in this period is that he's mentally strong, David. He's a quiet character. He's no flash. Nice lad. Keeps his set himself. He's got that bit of arrogance that you need. But certainly no in terms of being flash and that in the dressing room and whatnot. But on the pitch, that's his domain, and he will fly. The minute he gets his games and whatnot, that stuff will come around again. And hopefully that Motherwell, when that time comes, that Motherwell are remunerated properly. Because I would hate the fact that maybe he hasn't played enough games to get his value up to 3 million again, that people would be opportunistic. I'm pretty sure they will. And I'm hoping that Motherwell are strong enough to hold up for the right figure for such a talent. But it's not just the Turnbull. I mean, there's many sellable assets in the football club. It's about us keeping on to them as long as we can.
And the fact that David signed an extended contract as well, it showed his appreciation for the football club, and it would have been very easy for him to let the contract wind down and take one of the offers that was on the table. Instead, he's shown great maturity there as well, and great loyalty, which is quite a rarity in football, it must be said. It's advertised as a rarity anyway.
No, it is. And that for me was that's class. And I don't think that is any way he's not been manoeuvred into that position. I think he's thought, no, they've looked after me. They've given me the best rehab possible. And I also think it also goes back to the fact that he knows he's got the minerals to go and kick on again. So he knows, I'll give him Motherwell that year, that extra year, whatever, because I know. I'm not saying this is what he's saying, this is what I think. He's got enough about him to go and perform well for Motherwell first and foremost, and then get his move. But to, you know, like to touch on that, I mean, that's a massive call to make, and nobody would have begrudged him that.
I think when the news broke that he had signed a new contract, because it just didn't seem like something that was. It's just not something that really happens in the modern game, to be honest. It's just so
incredible. But again, it's no David Turnbull in isolation. It's the group. Mm-hmm. There's so many like that you would expect to make that, you'd call it a gesture, for want of a better word. But it's honourable. It's nice, but it's not surprising, to be honest.
And what the football club are doing in amidst this pandemic has been quite extraordinary as well. I saw the things with the staff and the players phoning the elderly season ticket holders, just checking up on people, making sure they're all right. The club is such a big part of the community. You even see last week the closure of M&D's and the Alone Hotel. These things, maybe to outsiders or people that don't live in the local area, might not seem very significant, but a town that has suffered so badly from the loss of industry, another couple of hundred jobs being lost, is devastating to hear. People will be suffering really difficult times just now. So the football club TAD is that beacon of the community and really know its place and how important it is to people. It's a really nice thing. I see the thing about trying to sell out the stadium, a kind of virtual day that they're going to have for This Is House and the community trust. These things are things that this football club does time and time again. And you've touched on it, how kind of special it is to so many people. I think it's things like this that really establish it as being that important and that. And you can tell why it gets under people's skin, basically.
Mm. And it comes from, like I said before, the leadership within the football club. Now, football clubs, you know, it's an institution, right? But it's the people within that institution that make the culture. It's not in the walls. It's the people that are in the building that drive that and are conscientious in their work and the conscientious of what impact they know they have on this small... I mean, how many people live in Motherwell? 40,000? I don't know. You know, so this football club is an integral part of the community. And by the way, you feel it. You can sense it. And it's not just young guys. It's all 90-year-old men and 70-year-old women that are in the stadium every week. It's honestly, and I've only been in a tiny, tiny, tiny part of this football club, but it's some place that it gets under your skin. Actually, it's a cracking club, it's just nice to be part of. And you see the all the remarks on online how well it was received by the elderly people. But it's only one thing they've done. This is like they're coming up with different schemes all the time to look after their own. So it's again, I go back to it's the leadership. It's the people in the building that are driving this.
And the fans are certainly rallying behind the club as well. You see the season ticket figures up massively year on year. I know it's exceptional times, and as I say, there's so much uncertainty as well. We don't really know when next season's going to start. So for over 1,000 people to part with their hard-earned not really knowing the circumstances, it's just a kind of statement of support and dedication to the cause, which must be really reinvigorating for everyone involved at the football club, that the fans are still going to be there when normality resumes and they're going to back the club in big numbers.
No, I think that, you know, it's a kind of, I don't think it's just Motherwell in isolation. I think most teams, like the Scottish community, they do stick together when times are hard, and I'm just glad that Motherwell fans are following suit. I think when we're sitting in third, hopefully going to get a European place, you know, it's an exciting time, and it's an exciting time to be a Motherwell fan. So again, I hope it doesn't just, you know, I hope it keeps continuing in terms of the season ticket sales, because every little helps. You know, we don't know what's around the corner, and this income could be crucial for the football club keeping the doors open. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but, you know, it might be. You know, they're talking about Armageddon in some quarters in Scottish football, so I don't think we are quite like that yet, but it's certainly, any amount of income we're getting at the moment, it's certainly helping.
Yeah. In terms of your role at the football club, it has changed over the last year. You talked about how much you enjoyed going into the football club on a daily basis. None of that enthusiasm seems to have wavered in the slightest. Are you still enjoying it every bit as much as you did when you returned to the football club in a coaching capacity?
Yeah, well, this is my life. Football's my life, and I mean, I'm not anything special. I'm the same as anybody in the building. We love to go to work. I do miss, naturally, I do miss helping the younger generation on a day-to-day basis, but if I'm being honest, I'm probably tailor-made for the first-team environment, which I do enjoy. It's a different kind of challenge. You've got boys there with opinion, which I like. I like to be challenged. I like to be questioned. I like to be quizzed. I like to be probed. In a footballing sense. I enjoyed both. But being up with the first team, close to the heat, you know, that close to the first team stuff, that's the business end of the football club, while having one eye on what's happening below also, because they're only across the pitch, you know, but we're still monitoring everything they're doing. Demeter Carroll's, you know, he's been a good addition to the club. Again, another boy that's an energy giver. So, listen, my role has changed slightly, but like I say, we're such a small building that we're on top of each other. So we're paths cross on a daily basis anyway.
Doing these 14 podcasts in a fortnight to raise money for the Scottish Association for Mental Health, what I've been asking towards the end of these episodes is what the guests are doing to pass their time, to try and keep their spirits up, or wee bits of advice that you can give to kind of keep on top of your mental health during these troubling times. There's a lot of worrying stuff going on and being reported. It can be quite hard to stay completely positive, can't it?
I mean, when I quit football in 2011, for about a year, I was unemployed, and I started educating myself in engineering. And I was struggling a wee bit mentally, financial problems, etc., with the financial crisis and whatnot. And, you know, I'd went to the doctor, etc. I just didn't feel the doctor was going to be anything for me. And I just took it on myself to get routine, get a good sleeping pattern, and I felt it helped me enormously. So I think getting up early, and I know I don't look like it now, but in the days I was getting up every day and having a shave. I get my routine in, I would read books, I would study, I would keep my mind active rather than sitting vegetating on the sofa, which I did to start with, and it didn't help me. So I think getting fresh air every day, even if you don't feel like it, get out and get fresh air. But I think getting up early, having a routine, make your bed in the morning. You know, just wee tiny things, just routine that just keeps you on top of things. Don't let things fester. Speak to people if you can. I think talking to people always help, even if you're scared to, which, you know, sometimes people are scared to show their underbelly and show their weakness, but I don't think there's anything to gain by it. So to reiterate, I think getting out of the house, of course, being adhering to the social distancing, etc. But I think you've got to keep your life as simple as possible. And that would be my, you know, it's basic advice. It's no rocket science, but it definitely helped me by keeping my mind active and my body active. That would be my advice.
Yeah, and I think I've kind of got a bit less apologetic for saying how much I'm missing the football just now. And that one kind of special thing that we've got to look forward to is the 3 o'clock on the Saturday when this all does die down and we're back to it. How good does that sound at this moment in time, getting back to the proper stuff? Because obviously, given your career in the game and now in the coaching side of it, 3 o'clock on a Saturday is a highlight, isn't it?
No, 4:45 is a highlight when you've got 3 points in the bag. That's the highlight. 3 o'clock, you're on the nerves and everybody's stressed out. Four to five is beating Aberdeen at home. That's what we fans say. No, listen, just to be back and see the players again, you share so much time with footballers. They get under your skin. They're part of your life. You know, you care for these people. And when you don't see people you care for, you know, you miss them. It's a big loss. So I just kind of wait to get in there, you know, see all the kit man, see you and the chef, shake hands with all the players again, you know, and just ping a 30-yard laser to somebody on the training pitch. That's what I fancy doing. I just kind of wait to touch the ball. It's a big part of Scottish culture, big part of the economy, and I think the quicker we get back on the football pitch, the better for everyone.
Yeah, it's certainly something that we're all yearning for just now, and fingers crossed it won't be too long. I'd like just to take the chance to thank everyone who has supported the podcast in the last couple of weeks. We've passed £450 of donations, which is absolutely fantastic, and Sam Beach have been in touch to thank us for that. So yeah, greatly received, and hopefully we can build that tally a wee bit more in the next couple of days. Morris, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you today. Thank you very much, mate.
Thank you very much for having me. Thanks. Great initiative.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. I'll be back tomorrow. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
Summertime, now we find ourselves in late December. I believe that New Year's Eve will be the perfect time for their great surrender, but they don't remember. Anger wants a voice, voices won't sing. Sinners harmonize till they can't hear anything. Thought that I was free from all that questioning, but every time a problem ends, another one begins. And the stone walls of harmony all bear witness. Anybody with a word in mind can never forgive the sight of wicked snakes inside a place you thought was dignified. I don't wanna live like this, but I don't wanna die. Oh,
beats like a young pretender's. Beneath these velvet gloves I hide the shameful crooked ends of a moneylender. Cause I still remember. Anger wants a voice, voices wanna sing. Sinners harmonize till they can't hear anything. Thought that I was free from all that questioning. But every time a proud romance, another one begins. And the stone wall was a vomit, I'll bear witness. Anybody with a word in mind can never forgive the sight of wicked snakes inside a place you thought was dignified. I don't wanna live like this, but I don't wanna die. Was dignified. I don't wanna live like this.